You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is episode 4. Well, hey friends, and welcome to Feathers. I'm so glad you're here. I just want to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for sticking with us. We're on episode 4 now, and I know I have been so blessed with every single episode, and I hope it's been the same for you. Today, we actually have Jessica Lee Hoover. Jess is a wife, mama, writer, and grace lover. Her family has a bit of wanderlust, which has taken them all over the place, including West Africa. Currently, she is doing life in the hills of Western North Carolina with her husband and 3-year-old daughter. Her journey has been filled with loss, laughter, and everything in between, and she writes about it all on her blog, jessicaleehoover.com. Jess's story is just absolutely amazing. I wish we had time to start at the very beginning and just talk about her life. I hope you check it out on her blog. But today, we're talking about a journey that the Lord had her family on in regards to missions. And I think what we're going to learn today is what faith really looks like. I think some of us have an idea of what the most faithful people look like. And I think she really is here to debunk that a little bit and talk about what faith in flight really does look like. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Jess Hoover. Well, Jess, welcome to Feathers today.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
So, Jess, why don't you tell us a little bit about your family?
Sure. I'm married to my husband, Kyle, and he is an engineer / geologist, and we have a daughter who's 3 years old, and her name is Millie, and we've got a little boy who is on the way, due in April, so I am 32 weeks large right now. So, yeah, that's our little family. We live in Western North Carolina. We have lived in Western North Carolina for pretty much our whole marriage except for when we lived overseas and a short stint in Charlotte, North Carolina. But we've lived here in the mountains of North Carolina for the better part of 10 years. And so, yeah, that's our little family. We're both born and bred North Carolinians. So Southerners in our hearts for sure.
So you guys have some kind of exciting news. I hear you guys have a new house.
We do. And I am very excited because part of my story is, and this isn't what we're going to be talking about today, but I lost my parents when I was younger and lived with my grandparents in pretty much the age of 12. Has kind of just every few years moved around. And even when we got married a decade ago, we've just moved pretty much constantly. I think I tallied up that we've moved about 14 times in the last 10 years. And that includes anything from like our first apartment to our second apartment to living in my in-laws' house to living in a shed at one point to
okay, I need to hear that story sometime. Wow.
Yeah, to house sitting for a year, to living in a parsonage for a month. We've pretty much lived in almost any kind of situation that you can imagine. So for us to finally have a place that is our own is a pretty big deal. So we moved, I guess we've been here like a week and a half. And it feels very surreal. Like I keep feeling like I need to be like, what day is our rent check due? Or like, wow, we really don't have to move all of this stuff again in like 6 months. Or, we finally emptied out our storage unit, which like was a big deal. And I keep telling Kyle that the day that we like unpack all of our boxes, that we just need to like have like a big party and just burn all of them just very symbolically.
Absolutely. We've only moved twice since we've been married for 16 years. And we actually moved our whole shed to my in-laws' backyard when we moved, and there was a ton of stuff in there. Well, the shed ended up, we moved away, and then we moved back a year later. And just, I mean, it's been, let's see, I think 11 years since we've been back, and my father-in-law still called me. He called me last week, and he was like, you still have some of your stuff over here. And I'm like, if I have not touched it in 11 years, I'm pretty sure I don't need it.
Just get rid of it, yeah. Well, that was the thing. We unloaded our storage unit, and it was like, oh, this is where that was, or what? Why did I have this? Like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of funny. So, yeah, this is a pretty big deal. And, you know, it's in some ways it's a big commitment in our heads to be in a place and live in a place a little more than a year or you know, even months, because there have been several times where we have lived in places just for a few months. So, yeah, we're getting settled in, and it feels a little weird, but it feels really good too.
Oh, I'm so excited for you guys. And so today we are going to be talking probably about a couple of those moves. You guys have been on a journey since you guys have been married, and you guys, from my understanding, had plans to, you know, live out a call to a life of missions overseas, and then that call ended up looking a lot different than you thought. Obviously, you're back in the Carolinas now, so I'd love to hear that story about, you know, the last decade of your life and how all that worked out. So can you just take us back when you guys had all those plans in your mind?
Yeah, so my husband and I, we met working in ministry. We were working at a camp in Western North Carolina, and when we met, we kind of started a relationship. We really knew that we both wanted, as individuals, both wanted to be involved in overseas work in some way. And I like to talk about my husband as being a different kind of smart than me. He is just a really science-minded, engineering-minded guy, and also has a heart to see the gospel go to the ends of the earth. And so he was in school getting a geology degree at NC State and really had a heart to use water as mission. And I thought that was a pretty cool thing. And as our relationship grew, we decided, you know, this is something that we want to do. We want to go overseas. We want to serve wherever God will take us. And we had no idea what that looked like. We just knew that that was something that we wanted to be a part of our life together and our life as believers. So we got married, and I decided, I had kind of been a college dropout, and I decided I wanted to go back to school. And so we ended up living in Asheville, North Carolina. And so for the first 5 years of our marriage, my husband worked just kind of a 9-to-5 job in an engineering firm. And I finished my college degree. And after I finished school, we really started intently looking at where we wanted to go and who we wanted to go with and all of those kind of nuts and bolts of actually going to the field. And I guess it was 2009, I finished school, and for about a year and a half after that, we planned and we began to raise money to support our life on the field, because the agency that we chose to go through, we had to raise our own funds in order to go to the field. And so we began that process in, I guess it was fall of 2011. We actually get on a plane and we go to Liberia, West Africa. The plan was that he was going to go develop water and sanitation programs for the branch of our organization's mission that was in Liberia. Liberia was in civil war for the better part of 25 years, and as a country, just has no infrastructure. I mean, health-wise, utility-wise, like, just very, very poor and very underdeveloped because of the destruction that happened there because of the war. And it's a very interesting country, and a country that we fell in love with while we were there. But we made it there that fall, and we lived very rurally. We lived in what we call the bush, but honestly, that makes it sound like we were living in like a mud hut, and we really weren't. We were living in a compound that was run by Italian nuns, and our organization had a base there, a base that had actually been there throughout the war, and we were able to be a part of some pretty neat things while we were there. And we had planned to be there for a year, and we got there, actually we got there like Halloween of 2011, and within just a couple months of us getting there, there was a refugee crisis, which if you talk to my husband, it's kind of a funny story because he swore up and down, like before we had gone to West Africa, he had been, actually, he'd been to North Korea, which, like, do you know anyone that's been to North Korea? No.
No.
Exactly. He had been to North Korea. He'd been to a couple other places that were, like, you know, closed off places that you would be like, that would be pretty scary to go there. But he was actually super terrified of West Africa because he said it's just such an unstable place. And so, of course, that's where God called us, because somehow God knows that we need to go to the places that scare us so that we'll trust him more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's exactly where we ended up. And within like a couple months, there was a refugee crisis in the Ivory Coast, which is the country that is directly to the east of Liberia. And particularly in the region that we were in, has very close border with the Ivory Coast. And so there was a political issue and there was a refugee crisis and like hundreds of thousands of refugees came into our part of the country. And so like we ended up doing work that like we just, it was outside of our experience, outside of what we really envisioned doing while we were there. So pretty much immediately God was like, you know, what you think you're going to be doing and what actually you're going to be doing are two very different things. And so that happened. And so we spent the better part of the first half of our time there just in this very stressful environment of working with like development and aid organizations who were trying to meet the needs of these refugees. And, you know, at the same time, we're trying to pour into the believers that are already in the country. And it was just ministry-wise, just very different than we envisioned. But then on top of that, about 6 months into our stay there, we found out that I was pregnant with our daughter, Millie. And the thing about that is that Liberia, and what you have to know is my background, I got a degree in women's studies, which is kind of a useless degree, but what that did is it led me to become a birth doula, and I worked a lot with women who were in crisis pregnancy situations. And so the work that I primarily did in Liberia was working with women who were pregnant, making sure they were getting proper care and that they were able to deliver safely, because Liberia has one of the highest rates of maternal and infant mortality in the world. So for me to get pregnant while we were there was just a little bit ironic, because I'm in one of the worst places in the world to be pregnant. And I was really, really sick. And what we had planned to have been a year long stay had to be cut short because I was really sick from the pregnancy. And so my husband sent me home early from the field, and it was really just a couple months early by the time I actually got home, but it was still earlier than what we thought, and we still didn't really have a plan for what we were going to do when we came home. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up coming home early. And like I said, we had raised our own support to go over there. And so financially, we were kind of at the end of our finances. And so we had some pretty big questions as to like, how are you going to provide for us coming home? You know, we're about to have our first child and we don't have a place to live and we don't have any jobs. We don't have any of this. And we have a great supporting family and we have great people, both in churches and just individuals that have supported us throughout our journey as workers overseas and both here at home. But we still had just huge questions because, like I said, we didn't have jobs. We didn't have a place to live. We just had question marks is what we had. And so we came home, and within just a couple months, Kyle had a job and we found a place to live, and we even found a church that was pastored by an old friend of ours, and it was just a random church we visited, and we didn't know that this friend of ours was a pastor there. So, like, God just, he really lined things up for us. But, you know, and Amy, I know you live in, not in Charlotte, but Charlotte area. But Charlotte was like, as Kyle called it, Charlotte was his Nineveh. Like, it was not the place, like, in all of North Carolina, he was like, I just don't really want to live in Charlotte. And of course, that's where God provided a job. And it was like, God's like, well, I don't really care where you want to live. And so God provided for us during that time. And so we end up moving, and he starts his job. And within just, I guess it was just 3 or 4 months of that, our daughter was born, and there's just so many changes that were going on. But through it all, like, we just really sensed that God was not done with using us in this calling overseas. And we couldn't figure it out because we felt kind of stuck. You know, we needed this job because we needed an income. And my husband especially just felt very stuck in this job that he had. And it was a good job, but it wasn't, for him as a man, it wasn't a very fulfilling job. It wasn't really, like, stimulating him professionally. And he just came home very frustrated. And I saw him get, depressed sounds like a strong word, but just as down as I'd ever seen him. And it was really hard for me to watch him, you know, just struggle to get out of bed in the morning and go to a job that he hated and come home, all the while feeling like he had really given up something when we came home from the field. And so probably less than a year into him having that job, we just really began to pray, like, God, what do you want us to do? Because we don't feel like this is where you want us long term, but, you know, financially, we can't make any big leaps. So what is it that you want us to do? So as we prayed that, we have always really had a heart. The organization that we went overseas with is called Equip International, and they are an organization based here in Western North Carolina, and they specialize in training and sending missionaries who have vocations that they can use on the field. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, my husband, he is an engineer, and he wants to be able to use the skills he has to minister overseas, both in word and in deed. One of the things that he loves is that he can teach a group of men how to do something very practical. And at the same time, that allows him to build relationships with those men that can open doors to talk about the gospel. And we really feel really passionate that, you know, anyone can be a missionary. Like, you can use the skills that you have. You don't have to be a seminary graduate, but you can use the things that God has given you and the way that he has geared you in order for you to be able to minister to people. And that goes not just for overseas missions, but for the way that you love and interact in your own community, even here in the United States. So anyway, the organization, they train and send missionaries all over the world. And so we have people who come to Western North Carolina from all over the world to get training. And as we began to pray, like, we weren't necessarily feeling called back to the field overseas in the way that we had been to Liberia. We really felt called, like, we would like to come be a part of what's going on with our organization here stateside. But we also knew the only way that was going to happen was for us to raise our own support and make this big leap out of a job that was secure. So even though he didn't love his job, you know, it was a steady income. And so I guess about 18 months after we had come home from the field and made the move to Charlotte, we got the opportunity to move to Marion, North Carolina, which is kind of on the border of the foothills and the mountains in North Carolina. It's about 30 minutes outside of Asheville. Mm-hmm. And so we got the opportunity. We had a couple that had worked with Equip, and they had been back and forth from serving overseas, and they were getting ready to go back, and they owned a home, and they said, you know, we would love to have someone come house it for us for this next year that we're going to be gone, so that the house isn't just sitting there without anyone living in it. And so they offered for us to just live in their house for a year. So we were like, okay, I mean, that's obviously like a huge part of your expense, of your just general expenses of life. And so we knew that we could have their house for a year, and that would allow us some freedom to do some support raising. And we had still had some people that were supporting us from when we were overseas before. And so we ended up making the move to Marion in, it was 2013, so it would have been like March of 2013. Kyle quit his job, and we packed up our stuff. We put most of our stuff in the storage unit, and we moved into our friend's double-wide trailer where we lived for the next year. And during that year, you know, it's interesting, because I think sometimes we think that when we make a big leap for God, that somehow all of the question marks will go away, and somehow it'll just be easy, and we'll just get to watch all the pieces just come together. And that does happen a lot of times, but it doesn't always happen in the way that we think it will. And so we had made this big leap out of a full-time job and to a new community, but at the same time, we had to raise all of our own support to work at Equip. And we began the process of doing that, which, you know, raising support is an interesting journey. If anyone is listening has ever done that, it is a huge faith journey, because you have to completely depend on God speaking to other people in order for you to have your ends met. And it's a scary place to be. And so we took classes, and we went through all these different kind of things that are supposed to train you to do support raising. And we did trips to visit churches that were hundreds of miles away. We, you know, called through a huge contact list, just sharing with people. We sent out tons of letters. Like, it's a very involved thing. It's more than just sending out a letter to people. It's very involved, and it can take up a good bit of your time in order to do it. And so we spent a year doing that. And at the end of that year, my husband was just so discouraged, because he felt like our ends just weren't meeting. Like, we were getting by, but it just felt like every single month, like, we were just barely getting by. And some months we were having to make financial decisions that just weren't good, because our ends weren't meeting. And so it was just very discouraging, because we just kept thinking, God, like, is this not what we're supposed to be doing? What are we supposed to be doing? We just had all these questions, and the questions kept getting bigger as our bank account kept getting smaller. And so after about a year of this, Kyle was really questioning, like, what do we do? Do I get a job? Do I try to work part-time? You know, I want to continue working here at Equip and continue doing things. And there were some things going on within our organization. We had a new president, and there were some changes going on that we felt really positively about, but it was change, and it was hard. You know, if anyone's ever worked anywhere, really, you know, like, when you have boots on the ground somewhere, it can be very difficult, very different than maybe you imagine it to be. And so all of those questions kind of played into our thinking. It was just like, is this where we're supposed to be? Is this what we're supposed to be doing? And one day Kyle was down. He had set up a lunch with a guy that he used to work with in Asheville. And this lunch was in order for Kyle to share with him what we were doing and to ask him to be part of our support team. And so he meets with the guy, and they're having lunch, and Kyle's sharing with him about what it is that we're doing and how he can be a part of it and everything. And this guy looks at Kyle, and he says, well, he's like, I was really glad that you wanted to meet with me because I want to offer you a job. And Kyle was like, what do you mean you want to offer me a job? And the guy explains this job. And so he wraps up lunch with him, and he gives me a call when he's on his way back home. And I'm like, how did your lunch go with this guy? And he says, well, it was kind of strange. He offered me a job. I was like, what? He offered you a job. And at the time, I just kind of was almost dismissive of it. I was like, well, okay, well, we don't need a job. We have a job. We need supporters.
So is this was this a ministry job, or was this like comparable to what he had like in Charlotte, something like that?
No, it was an engineering job with a company. It was not a ministry job at all. And that was really what kind of threw us, was that, you know, it wasn't a ministry job. It wasn't anything like that. It was just kind of out of left field, just a job. But it was an interesting job, with an interesting company. It was different than the job he had worked in Charlotte, for sure. But like I said, I was kind of dismissive of it because I was like, well, that's not what we're trying to do. So that was nice of him to offer you a job. But he got home and we started to talk about it, and I could tell that he was kind of thinking about it. And he said, you know, well, this job, we wouldn't have to move. We could stay here, but I would have to travel. And he was kind of telling me about this, but I could tell, like, just in talking to him, like, he was really torn. Like, what do I do? What am I supposed to do in this situation? Am I supposed to say yes? Because saying yes to the job means saying no to working full-time in this ministry that I really believe in. But at the same time, saying yes to the job means I have a steady income for my family. So I could just see his wheels kind of turning, like, what is the right answer? What is the right answer to this question?
Yeah, and I think, too, I can see how the questions would be there, because, like, the Christianese, I guess you could say, type of answer was like, well, of course you should go into ministry, right?
Right. Yeah, and it was, because I think both for him and for myself, I couldn't decide what was the most faithful thing to do, because I think we really get it in our heads that there's only one way to be faithful, and the most spiritual thing is usually the thing that's the most difficult or the hardest, or, you know, looks like the biggest leap. And in my experience, sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it is selling all of the things that you have and going overseas. I've been there, done that. But then sometimes God provides for you in a way that you never would have guessed, because he wants to do something different than you ever would have guessed. So it was like, this was a really hard time too, I have to say. This would have been like April of last year. And during this time, Kyle got this job offer, and he was just really tore up about it. Like, he didn't know what to do, because he loved working at Equip and loved, I mean, the year before, he had gotten to go for like a month to Kenya. He had gotten to go to Colombia for 10 days. He had gotten to go to do like several conferences and interact with other people doing similar things in his field. And almost weekly, he was doing like Skype sessions with missionaries on the field who needed trouble or needed help troubleshooting water and sanitation problems. Like, he was just getting to do a lot of things that he loved. And all of a sudden, you know, he has this job offer. And it was several weeks of him just really not knowing which way to go. And we would talk about it and we would pray about it. And it just felt like there wasn't an answer, at least not a good answer. It felt like either way, it was a struggle. And at the same time, we had a miscarriage during that time. And so I think that just kind of added to the whole situation. So we had a miscarriage, he had this job opportunity, and then the third thing was that the missionaries that we had been house sitting for were coming home from the field, and we didn't have a place to live. Like, we had no place to go, and because of our support level, because our finances were so low, we really had very few options as far as what we could afford. And so we were kind of sweating it. We were kind of thinking, are we going to be like homeless in a month? Which we knew like we wouldn't be. We had plenty of friends who would, you know, let us live in basements. And as I said, we've lived in some pretty strange situations. So that wouldn't have been too far out of the realm of possibility. But we were kind of sweating it nonetheless. It was like, we really don't know what we're going to do. And so all in the course of a month, he ended up taking the job, and he ended up, he ended up taking the job, and then we ended up moving out of the house that we were in and into a parsonage that a local church had turned into like their missions house, and they would let missionaries stay in it when they were home from the field. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed there for a month while we waited for this other house that some friends of ours owned to become free so that we could live there. And so that was May of last year. And it was just a total transition. It was just, we got to stay where we were, which was good, at least in the same community. And we were able to continue working with our organization here, but on a much, much, much more limited basis, because now Kyle was working a full-time job. So that's kind of the big story. But I just think the things that we walked away from the whole experience with were just the fact that we thought God was doing something. You know, when you think about, people have a very spiritual idea of what a missionary looks like, and we have a very, we tend to think of God's will is something that's very static. Like, you know, we felt this calling to go overseas and to live a life overseas, and we still feel that calling, and we still think that in the future there's a high possibility that God will call us back overseas, but that just isn't what He has done in the last 3 years. And so I think that for us, that all of these questions, we've had to really lean into trusting that God was for us in every circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
That at no point, because I think we can elevate calling above like what really God is trying to do. Like, we think that in order to be in His will, we have to be doing the thing that's the most spiritual, whether it's giving all our belongings away or going to live overseas or making some sort of huge sacrifice. And I think that His will, and I think that the calling that we have on our life as believers is a lot more day-to-day than that. I think that it's leaning into Him each day and trusting that He's going to make our paths clear. I think about how, you know, Matthew says to seek first the kingdom of God, and to knock and the door will be open unto you. And I think God gives us a very active role in that we do need to be seeking Him. We need to be seeking Him in His word. We need to be seeking Him through prayer. When opportunities arise that are unexpected, we need to be seeking Him diligently in a very active pursuit. But then He does say, knock and the door will be open unto you. And I think sometimes, like that whole month where we were trying to figure out, is Kyle supposed to take this job? What does this look like? Are we being unfaithful if we jump into a job where we have a steady income and where some of the worries and the strains and the stresses that we have right now will go away? Like, are we being unfaithful? Are we somehow being less Christian, so to speak, if we do this other thing? And I think what God was saying was that you've been knocking, like you've been asking me to provide, and here I am providing for you, and I'm going to provide for you regardless, but I've opened this door for you, and you need to step into it, and you need to walk into it, and it's not less spiritual, and it's not any different than pursuing me in a calling overseas.
I just have to say that's so super encouraging to me. I have worked in corporate America at a bank. You could probably guess one of the two in Charlotte.
Yep.
Since 2001. And I think I do. You know, you think I'm sitting in a cubicle. What in the world am I doing for God? And even I have tended to, you know, elevate like, oh my goodness, like they are missionaries in Africa. Like they're the real Christians doing the real missionary work. But, you know, God has really dealt with me, I think, through the years. First, that it is a provision, and it's not just a provision for our family. I mean, we've been able to adopt just because we've had, you know, we do have the extra income and the place to stay, and it's very stable. We have the insurance to provide for all of our kids, of course. And then also that we've been able to, because you know, we do have income, we're able to support so many different organizations that, so we're on the other side of it, right?
Right.
So you had to, you know, build that support, but we're one of those on the other side, and it takes both of them to complete God's calling. And so it's, I might be sitting in a cubicle a lot, but I love what you're saying because, you know, that's also spiritual and that's where God has called me. And I have wanted to, trust me, quit so many times through the years and just be a stay-at-home mom. Like, I never felt like a real mom because I was a working mom. But God has, even in the last probably year and a half, He has really shown me that I am right where I need to be. And it's God's calling, even though it doesn't look like the quote unquote Christian-y thing to do.
Yeah, and I think something I was even just thinking about today, it was not related to this story at all, but how we can make either of those things idols, that we can either, obviously, like, there's the temptation to make comfort and ease an idol, but then on the other side of that, making an idol out of how spiritual we think our decisions are, whether that be how much we sacrifice or how much we, or how far we go, whether it be because we live in Africa or because we live differently in some way, you know, that those things can really become idols. And I think that, that God knows that that's just our tendency and wants us to just pursue Him from wherever He's placed us, you know? And I think that's been one of the biggest things that I have taken away from this last year especially, but really the last 3 years. I think something my husband and I talk a lot about is this idea of the division between the sacred and the secular. Mm-hmm. The idea that there are these two different worlds and that never the two shall meet kind of thing, you know, that that either you're living the life of someone who is sacrificing all for the cause of Christ, or you are living a life of just indulging in just the comforts of this world and being content with the things of this world. And I don't think that that's always the case. I think our lives are a lot of times very mixed up between the two. And the only real clear thing is the gospel in the mix, in the midst of that, and pursuing God from where you're at and what He's given you, which has been a huge lesson in the past year of figuring out, okay, you know, I think I had found some of my identity in being the family that lives overseas or the family that lives off support, you know, like mm-hmm. I had begun to find some of my identity. And I had a friend who very gently said to me one day, like, maybe God just wants you to begin to see yourself not as a missionary or not as, you know, a family who lives off support or whatever, you know, fill in the blank for whatever it is that you feel like is who you are, but maybe He wants you to see yourself more as just His, you know, more as just someone who is pursuing Him, not pursuing a calling, not pursuing a lifestyle, not pursuing a mind of Christ. And I think that's just been huge in my thinking, that rather than defining myself by something outside of myself, that I'm defining myself by who God is making me through the experiences that He is taking me and my family through.
I love that. And I love that the center of it should be Him. And also that He knows us, right? And He's interested in our development to be more like Christ. And so He knows, for one person, it's going to be best to be in corporate America, right? And then for another yeah. person, it's going to be overseas. And then, like you said, those two things go in and out as well, because I think He's most interested in building who we are, not what we do. And we do that by, like you said, going after Him.
Yeah, I think we can be really super narrow-minded. You know, I think that God's a lot more open-minded than we are, as far as, and those are loaded terms. I'm like, that's probably not the best terminology, but
yeah.
but just the idea that, like, God can see a million different things that we can't, and so He can piece things together in a way that we would just never, because we get so hard-headed, and I am, you know, I'm very stubborn, you know, and if I get my head, like, if I get my mind fixed on something, like, it's really hard to convince me otherwise. You can ask my husband. So I think a lot of times we do, like, we really get in our heads, like, this is supposed to look this way. And when it doesn't, like, we're like, well, we're just, you know, we're not getting it right. And God's like, listen, you know, there's more than one way for this to look. And maybe I want it to look differently so that you'll trust me more, which has definitely been my experience.
Absolutely. Well, Jess, thank you so much. I mean, there's like a gazillion questions I could ask you. I would love to hear more about your experience overseas more and all kind of things.
Living in a shed?
Yeah, I still need to hear the shed story sometime. But let's wrap up tonight with what scripture could you pull out that either, you know, really comforted you during this time or something that maybe that you would go back and give yourself through some of these decisions?
I think there's actually a scripture and a quote that's not from scripture that were things that both encouraged me and really pointed me towards the cross during this time. And one of those was a quote that I came across. I think I just wrote it down and I didn't put who said it, but I think it was from Ann Boskamp. And she said, there are two kinds of doubt, one that fully lives into the questions and one that uses questions as weapons against fully living. And for me, that was something that for the last 3 years I've really struggled with because we've just had a lot of questions about where our life was going and how God was going to provide. And there were times, and there still are times, I will say that, I used that doubt to retreat from community. I used that doubt to retreat from even God, you know, that I didn't want to be in the Word because I was so filled with doubt, which is, of course, the opposite thing that we need to do, that when we are filled with doubt, we should be running to the cross. But oftentimes, when we're filled with doubt, we retreat into ourselves and away from the truth that can set us free from that doubt. And so it's just been really neat to see as I've chosen, because it really is a choice when we're wondering how God's going to answer all of those questions. It really is a choice to lean into Him. And another passage, you know, I talked a little bit about those passages in Matthew where He says to seek Him first, and that if we knock, He'll open the door. But in Lamentations chapter 3, verses 22 to 25, He says, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in Him. The Lord is good to those who wait for Him, to the soul who seeks Him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord." And I think just the past year, there were times, especially during that time of transition where we were trying to decide whether or not to take that job, where it just felt like we were having to wait really quietly, that we were having to still ourselves in order to hear from God, that we were having to just wait for an answer when we wanted something clear cut. We wanted something easy to understand, and what God was giving us wasn't easy to understand. It seemed like a derailing of His plans, which we now realize were just a derailing of our own plans. And that scripture just really encouraged my heart that He is steadfast and He is faithful, and He gives us what we need when we need it.
Absolutely. And that's a beautiful way to end tonight. So thank you so much, Jess, for sharing your story. I know it's going to be so encouraging to so many people.
Thank you. And I was going to tell you, I didn't work this into the story, but I mentioned that back in last April when we were having to make this decision and we had a miscarriage. I guess it was September. So we had a miscarriage in April, and then in September we found out that we were pregnant again with the baby that's due here in April. And when right around the time we found out that we were pregnant in September was when you were finding all of your feathers. And mm-hmm. And I found my own little tiny baby feather around that same time. And
well, thank you for sharing that. I love that.
So it was a little tiny baby feather right next to my bed. And I'm pretty sure it must have come out of a feather pillow, but I'd never seen any of the feathers come out of the pillow until then.
Well, I totally count those. People tell me that all the time. I'm like, I count them. They, you know, they didn't have to be in my path.
Yeah. And it was just a tiny little one. And so it was right when you had made that post and everyone was putting feathers on Instagram. And I was like, yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, I love that. Okay, that's a perfect way to end.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
So guys, I hope you really enjoyed that conversation with Jess. You can see she has so much wisdom and experience to speak from. It was such a reminder that our faith can be in flight no matter what kind of situation we're in. It really is about following after God and walking those steps that He has prepared beforehand. And it's going to look different for each of us. So we really have to search Him out for us and not try to follow some sort of image that we have in our head of what a faithful life looks like. So I hope you really enjoyed that. I'm so glad to have you on this podcast with me. And I hope you check out featherspodcast.com where you can leave comments and feedback, help us figure out what we can do better. And if you know anybody that has a really great story we should share, I would love to talk to you about them. Until then, we will see you next time on Feathers.